From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Baltimore's public markets are among the oldest in the United States. In the mid-19th century, Lexington Market was one of the most famous markets in the world. In modern times, Lexington and the other city markets have struggled with vacancies. Renovations are planned for several of them, but last week the developer charged with renovating Cross Street Market on South Charles backed out after years of negotiations. What does the future hold for Baltimore's public markets? We speak with Robert Thomas, Executive Director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation.
We have more markets than most American cities, and that is a treasure that has not been necessarily promoted or even recognized.
Baltimore Business Journal real estate reporter Melody Simmons joins us too. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Baltimore's public markets are an enduring feature. The city had some of the earliest public markets in the United States. After visiting Lexington Market, Ralph Waldo Emerson dubbed it, quote, the gastronomic capital of the world, close quote. But in modern times, the city's markets have struggled with vacancies, and in some, the fare tends toward the fast and the fried. Renovations are planned for several of the markets, but the city was dealt a setback last week when the developer charged with renovating Cross Street Market on South Charles Street backed out of the deal after years of negotiations. What does the future hold for Baltimore's storied public markets? Robert Thomas, Executive Director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation, the nonprofit organization that administers the markets, is with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
And Baltimore Business Journal reporter Melody Simmons has covered recent developments at both Cross Street and Lexington Markets. Welcome back to On the Record, Mel.
Thanks, Sheila.
Robert Thomas, does the city have an overall vision for the public markets? There seem to be a lot of plans afoot.
There are a lot of plans afoot. From my standpoint, the vision for the markets is to make each of them and all of them collectively more effective in serving the communities where they're located, and all of them to work more effectively as a system, which is a new thought, given that we have more markets than most American cities, and that is a treasure that has not been necessarily promoted or even recognized.
Tell me more about how they would work as a system. They're certainly not geographically close to each other.
But they're not terribly far away either. I mean, given that most cities that I visited, and we visited all 50 states, have struggled to keep one public market going. We have six, and the interesting thing is that we should capitalize on that. So if we have two in the south, and two in the west, two in the east, those can work together as pairs, or we can have one hub and the rest be spokes so that, in fact, there is some economy of scale with purchasing and with distribution and with saving merchants having to run out and get goods that we could actually store at one or two locations. That's one of the pieces of the future vision. The other thing, too, is that we see ourselves, at least with the West Baltimore markets, like Avenue and Lexington, to be really at the edge of the West Market food desert, which goes a far ways into West Baltimore. It would be helpful, and this is a really future vision type of thing, to have a mobile market to reach places beyond Sandtown that go even farther out to Poplar Grove, do those sorts of things. The markets, of course, cannot solve all the food desert problems of the city, but we can start to make a dent.
Is addressing nutrition and food deserts a core part of the mission of the public markets?
It is. Health and nutrition education as well as food access are core pieces of the public markets. And in fact, it's part of the very reason why public markets exist and have historically functioned.
I'd like to focus on the Cross Street Market near Federal Hill. Melody Simmons, tell us briefly what kind of deal the city struck with Caves Valley, the developer who had been set to renovate Cross Street Market.
This was a complicated deal. It took about 2.5 years to put together. And basically, there were two developers to begin with. The other was Warhorse Scott Planks company, they backed out because it was really difficult to make the numbers work. Finally, after several months of negotiation, they put a deal together where it was up to 50 years, had a lease of up to 50 years, $10,000 a month that the developer, Cross Street Partners, would pay to the city. And at some point, there would be some profit sharing involved as soon as Case Valley got its money back for all the construction. There would be some profit sharing with the city. So it was very complicated and complex.
And it seemed to be moving along. What happened?
Well, the vendors were really never part of the conversation. And all the stories that I did, walking through the market, talking to them, they were very upset that they didn't have a seat at the table. They were on month-to-month leases, which they still are, and they felt very insecure about that. These are small business people. Many of them have been in the market for decades. Some of them have inherited the businesses from their parents. Going month-to-month, not very sure if you'll be there in 2 or 3 months, 6 months down the road. Being a small business, having employees who have been loyal was really shaky and caused a lot of concern and consternation. As soon as the new lease was announced in late November and early December.
Caves Valley.
Yes, with Caves
lease
Valley.
On the overall market. Yeah.
Right. As soon as it was announced and then dissected, it became very apparent that these vendors would be out of work because they had to close the market for up to 12 months. They said 10, but really up to about 12 months for the construction, shut it down completely, renovate it, and then reopen it with a new lease. The one thing that the vendors were told at a big meeting was that your rent will go up. Some of the offers that were made, the rents tripled. And this was right after being closed and shut down for almost a year.
Right. And another factor was a liquor license.
Yes. Caves Valley wanted an umbrella liquor license for the entire market. This required a change in the state law, because there are so many bars and restaurants down there now that the state has said no more. So if you want a new liquor license, it has to go through state legislature. So it was just about to be introduced in the General Assembly. It actually included Port Covington and Anthem House down in Locust Point. So it lopped in two other properties as well as Cross Street Market. That was a surprise. And then the legislators put a $50,000 per year fee on that liquor license for Caves Valley. And I think that sunk the ship. Mm-hmm. $50,000 a year.
You think that sunk the ship?
That's the way it appears. Caves Valley is not really talking much about it. The only thing that they will say right now is that the numbers didn't work. I think the liquor license really pushed everything over the abyss because they claimed that they were right on the margins. And the way it was looking with the vendors, there was a big public meeting. Arsh Murmurin, the developer, was there. He fielded a lot of questions for about 3 hours. It wasn't pleasant. It was a very stressful meeting. There were over 200 people there. Most of them were in support of the vendors. Caves Valley was holding the line. They were just saying, this is the way we have to do it. This is what we have to do. When it was revealed about the liquor license, in the scheme of things, that's when the wheels fell off the truck.
That's Melody Simmons, reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me here in the studio is Robert Thomas, executive director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation, and we are talking about Baltimore City's public markets. Robert Thomas, how big a setback is it for Caves Valley to have pulled out of the Cross Street Market renovation?
The bottom line is that either a third party and a public-private partnership develops the markets or redevelops the markets from the state they're in, or the market corporation does it. So in terms of it being a setback, it just means that we are going to take a little longer and have to cobble together more money, perhaps slower than a private developer would, to get the job done. But the job has to be done.
Does it send a message to some of the other projects you have going, and does it make the whole thing seem shaky?
I believe from a developer's point of view, each market as a one-off type of proposition is going to be a very stringent type of discipline for getting the numbers to work, simply because it's not your typical private sort of development where you can do rates at whatever you want and bring in whoever you want. upscale it if you'd like. It's not that kind of a deal. So since the parameters are in place that many of these have to remain markets, and since the communities around these markets are not such that would necessarily immediately adapt to a super upscale or an upscale type of market environment, it's a balancing act.
Is Cross Street the first time the city has attempted to turn one of these markets to a private entity for development?
It's the first time in my history. I've only been here for the last 19 years.
Well, Broadway Market, the North Shed, which is still vacant, was kind of on the drawing board for some private developers who were putting in some apartments next door, and that fell apart as well. So that market itself is still awaiting a redevelopment.
And at Cross Street, did any vendors actually move out?
There were actually some that moved out in the process. Over the course of the 2.5 years, there was at least one who moved into a space directly across the street. Others were considering it, but there were no actual moves beyond that point.
Melody Simmons, how hard do you think it will be for the city to find other interested developers?
I think that the figures have to work. These markets are in bad shape. They need a lot of work. One thing, talking with all the merchants for my stories, the common thread is that work needs to be done. So somebody has to come in. They have to form the public-private partnership with the city. The city found $2 million before. Not sure where that money came from. But there is $2 million on the table, maybe still, to start the new process again. One thing in the favor of Cross Street Market is geographically, it's located as a gateway to the Newport Covington development. That's incentive for some developer to come in and make another attempt at that, to gussy it up.
How optimistic are you?
Very, simply because there are things that have to get done. And we're going to replay this scenario at least 3 or 4 more times, simply because the markets are dated properties that need reinvestment like any property. They're not really old in building years, but in terms of the kind of use and intensive use that they've endured over the years, every property needs reinvestment, whether it's your house or the market.
And what is next then right now for Cross Street?
Well, we have a few steps. One is to just make sure that we understand, that I understand from our law department, the city's law department, which handles matters of this type, what the legal status is now post K's Value, post CSM Ventures LLC, to make sure that once we start talking with the tenants again, we're all on the same page, we're all on level ground. We'll need to recommit funds that were volunteered for this effort. And we also need to kind of get ourselves in a position to renegotiate leases, because at this point, we need to heal some damaged spirits, damaged hearts. There's a lot that needs to go on to just make sure that we include both tenants and residents and community in our plans going forward. What's next is a lot of conversation and some very serious plans, because we need to make sure that we realize some visible changes in this calendar year 2017. Something needs to happen visibly in this calendar year so that we can recover and move forward, not just in Cross Street, but in many of the markets, but starting with Cross Street.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, more about the future of Baltimore's public markets. We're going to talk about Lexington Market. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about Baltimore's public markets. 4 of the city's 6 public markets are in some stage of redevelopment. My guests are Melody Simmons, real estate and economic development reporter at the Baltimore Business Journal, and Robert Thomas, executive director of the nonprofit that runs the city's public markets. Melody Simmons, Let's turn to Lexington Market. Plans have been drawn up for raising and rebuilding it. Give us a sense of what the new market would look like.
It has all new plans. They would take down the current market and put up a whole new market nearby. The area where the market is right now would become a public park. So they've done really nice design. I think people are very happy about that. There's one issue, the funding.
You reported it would cost about $40 million?
Yes, about $40 million to replace it.
And that money would come from?
Well, it's another public-private partnership, and the state itself has committed so far $7.5 million through the governor's office. I understand from Kirby Fowler, who is head of the Public Market Corporation Board, that they will be asking the city to float a bond issue as well. We don't know the dollar figure on that yet.
Robert Thomas, is the existing Lexington Market structurally unsound? I mean, why tear it down?
Well, I want to make sure that we get one subtle detail straight in terms of sequence. We'll build first and then raise, because we only want to move the merchants one time. The issue with the current structure is not its structural instability, but its operating expense, which is at some point going to outrun the revenue that we bring in, and we don't really want that to happen. The other part is that renovating the market in place was quoted to us as being upwards of $90 million just to get all the infrastructure pieces in place. And this isn't really so much about the shell itself. The building still has good bones. But many of the systems that are still operating in the market, including big drain lines underneath the concrete and all of that, were done before Energy Star was even a thought. And so we have to bring it up to code.
So the plan is to build a brand new shiny market, and then while the vendors are still using the existing market, and only when the new building is ready for them to move into with the old building, and it will be torn down, even though it's still got good bones.
That is the initial concept. I must say that what happens north of the newer building is going to be very important to the newer building. If, in fact, there is a big cavernous, empty, unattractive thing sitting to the north of the new building, that will be a detriment to the design and it won't necessarily work out. What we do want is sort of a Camden Yards type of courtyard initially to the north of the market and then immediately adjacent to the north end of the market. And then the rest of it can be sort of a center plaza type of experience, but even that needs to be maintained and can be maintained probably to the tune of $250,000 or $300,000. Not something that we're planning on right now. We want to get past the building itself first.
Do you have any concerns about losing the historic character of the market?
I do not, for two reasons. One, we're going to keep a lot of the old signs. We'll keep the bell. We'll keep some of the things that sort of make the market the market. But the other thing is that every documented thing that I see about the historic Lexington Market, it was not so much about the architecture. In fact, I haven't found one glowing report about previous pieces of architecture that housed the market, but what you could get there.
The current building stems from the 50s, right?
That's correct.
After the fire in 49.
That's correct. Not considered historically significant as a building. We find that really the nature and the attraction of the market, and this is true in other markets around the country even now, is that what you can get at the markets continues to be more of the fascination rather than what kind of a glorious building it is.
Well, let me pull Melody Simmons into this because you've been reporting on these markets. It's hard to picture Fadley selling muskrat in this glitzy new building. Will something be lost? What are you picking up, Melody?
If the vendors are allowed to remain, I think you're still going to have some of those quirky Baltimore staples that are going to be sold in the stands. I don't see burger cookies going anywhere, the crab cake, the beer. I think that the idea is to make it more contiguous with the ballparks. And so there will be a lot of foot traffic, possibly get on the light rail, have a crab cake at the market, go on down to the game. These are some of the dreams that I'm hearing. The content of the market, I think, is going to be gussied up a little bit. I think they will put some nice roasteries in. You're going to have some artisan beer. You're going to have a lot of different, more modern touches to it. But I do think it will have the old as well as the new.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Robert Thomas, Executive Director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation, and Baltimore Business Journal reporter Melody Simmons. We're talking about Baltimore City's public markets. Melody, the city put out an RFP in December for developers interested in taking on Hollins Market and Broadway Market. And I understand Scott Plank, Kevin Plank's brother, expressed some interest in Hollins Market?
That's right. The deadline for the RFP is this week, so we are going to be seeing some more details. Scott Plank definitely interested in that West Side Market. There's a little bit of a spark going on over there, a lot of new development, a lot of private development. This will add to his goals, what we're hearing, to develop Hollins. He's bought up a lot of property around the market, and so this could be a whole new retail hub for that West Side that will connect to the Biopark. As far as Broadway, don't hear much about that. I drove past it the other day. It is calling for some love, calling out for some love.
How can the city afford to develop all these markets at once?
Actually, it wasn't planned. In fact, one of the goal-setting sessions I had with Kirby Fowler, I was advised not to try to redevelop all the markets at one time. But here we are, just because situationally, this is what the need is. And so it comes with the territory, and this is what's happening.
The plans for all these redevelopments were set in motion when Stephanie Rawlings Blake was mayor. Do we know where Catherine Pugh stands on them?
I've spoken with the mayor about it, and she's still trying to get her feet wet. She is a small businesswoman, so she understands the plight of a lot of these vendors who are barely making it on the margins. They're out there working every day. They really open, some of them at 6 a.m. So I think the mayor has been really with an ear to the ground on this whole thing. I think she was very surprised about Caves Valley pulling out of Cross Street last week, as we all were.
Robert Thomas, in an article about Lexington Market in Bon Appetit magazine in 2015, you were quoted saying, "What we have now is a public market that's evolved along the lines of the lowest common denominator of what the demand is," end quote. What does that mean?
It means that we don't have the diversity of offerings that attract the diversity of customers, basically. And retail tenants will adapt to their customer base. What we're seeing now is that the customer base that we have is not even treated necessarily to a diversity of offerings. What we want to do is make sure that we have sufficient offerings to attract a broad range of customers. And that's okay, because that's what a public market should be doing. If we are, in fact, playing to a base that is the one that we have, but not reaching out to more, that is discriminatory in its own sense, in the sense that we're not welcoming other people to the market because we're not inviting them. We're not offering what they ask for.
Well, some people may have listened to this whole conversation and thought almost the reverse, that the city is gentrifying its markets and going to leave out customers who won't be able to afford the new renovated markets.
And to that I say they haven't been here lately, because in fact what we have presently is a set of markets that really do manage very well, either through the EBT program or through just cash, to deal with and support customers who are at one end of the socioeconomic scale. And that's a good thing. And we should continue to do that. My contention is that we're not broadening that to include another customer base that perhaps has more diverse food interests. Given that we have a diverse population at the University of Maryland only blocks away, we need to make sure that we're offering enough in the way of diverse food preparations and food offerings to attract a good percentage of that group.
Melody Simmons, when you talk to developers, are they looking for an upscale clientele or a diverse clientele?
I think they're looking more upscale. Arsh Murmurin from Caves Valley was modeling the Cross Street Market on the very terminal market in San Francisco, which is very upscale. It would be a total turnover. He downgraded that a little to Union Market in D.C. later in the conversation when the controversy was roiling. He wanted to bring a Starbucks in. He mentioned that at the public meeting that they had. immediately he was booed. So I'm not sure that the developers have really listened to the community. I think that dialogue is now going to commence in the wake of what happened last week.
I'll give you the last word, Robert Thomas.
Well, I agree totally that the dialogue should commence and it should continue because we have to really serve the communities more effectively. And so that means we need to have an ear to the ground and we need to work out the numbers, of course, but we also need to work out the offerings and the hours and all the other things that are involved in the operation.
With all the different proposals that are bouncing around, how soon will we know whether this is working?
Within 30 days, we'll have some sense of where other private parties want to go with the markets that are being offered, and then we'll make an assessment of whether or not that is in line with where the markets as a whole and individually need to go.
Well, I appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Thomas is Executive Director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation, the nonprofit organization that administers the city's markets. Melody Simmons covers real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Business Journal. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow.